Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yindinji Country. That's BBM Bumblebrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS. Have you say, Yan up strong, you mob. Now, growing up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. That's the book, third book of the deadly sister, Samantha Faulkner. And got Samantha on the line. Let's talk about it. Samantha, good morning, sister. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Trevor. Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Coming to you from Ngunnawal Country in Canberra.
Cold city. Thank you, darling. Stay warm.
Warm sunshine and sky. Sky's blue, so can't complain.
Can't complain. Thank you for coming to the program. Before we start, sister, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from.
My mother's a Drummond, and Vicky Drummond.
Yes.
And grandfather is Ali Drummond. So I was born on TI and raised there. And so through Drummond's side, got connection to Badu and Moa Islands up in the Torres Strait. And through, grandfather's side, connected to Wutati and Yarragata mob on Cape as well too.
Beautiful, lovely footprint. And look, a big shout out to your beautiful cousin Barbara Drummond, who just dropped off some scones here at the Bumma Pepper Media for our morning tea. So two deadly sister.
Don't make me hungry already.
Listen, congratulations, your third book. Let's talk about this third book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. So you're author of two other books. We'll get into, well, mention those two other books. What was your first book, sister?
Yeah, Lifelong Ali Drummond, A Life in the Torres Strait. So I spent some time with my grandfather, who lived till he was about 98 before he, passed on. And just sitting down having yarns to him about what it was like being a pearl shell diver in the Torres Strait and, what it was like growing up in the sort of like early to mid-1900s.
Yes.
And, the life was different then, but it was also, very interesting working up on TI during World War II within the Civilian Construction Corporation, being around during that time of World War II, but also what it was like cutting cane by hand in far north Queensland as well.
Okay, that was that book. And your second book?
Second one was Palmley, Torres Strait Islanders in Canberra. So working with members and community of the ACT Torres Strait Islander Corporation here in Canberra.
Yes.
And just looking at how Torres Strait mob here maintain that connection to family, culture, identity, back home, and keep the culture alive when you're so far away too from home.
Exactly.
So just the interviews with people, really. So that was kind of, I guess, leading up to this next one.
Next one. Here it is, the third book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. So give us a bit of background in this. I mean, virtually the title says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess this one was long time coming. I think seeing all the deadly growing up stories coming out. This one's the eighth in the series of Growing Up in Australia. So many people might have seen the Growing Up Aboriginal in Australia that was edited by Anita Heiss as well too.
Yes.
So this is like an anthology of 19 contributors. There's four excerpts in there from people like Eddie Koike Mabo, Ellie Gaffney, Thomas Lower, Ina Titisi, and of course the other 19 contributors are all deadly people too, like Lenora Thacker, Jimmy Barney, Gillian Boyd Bowie.
Some good names there, sister. Some good names.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've
Plenty
more missed out too, so,
Exactly.
If, It's only a taste, really, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's painting a picture as, well, and educating the people of the world that when you talk about the Big Island, Australia, there's two nationalities. There's First Nation, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island, and it's good to hear the Torres Strait Island side of things as well. Hey, sis.
I think it's important to showcase the different cultures and identities, but also show that same time, you know, we still have that love for family, connection to country, and, you know, we all want the best for the future, for our kids, for the next generation as well, too. Some shared themes along there as well, too.
Yeah, and so, like, I look at my beautiful father, who's a First Nation man, Murray man from Cloncurry, Murray from the Curry, but all our mob, there's Doomadgee and Mornington Island, the Wanyi and Gungalita mob, and then my beautiful mother with me in spirit, Darnley Island Arab, you know. So best of both worlds. So, and it's great to hear both sides of the story, so to speak.
I think it's very important, and also, you know, a gift for all Australians as well, too, that should be proud. There's Aboriginal culture, Torres Strait Islander culture. We can all share and learn from one another. But, you know, we all live on this beautiful continent too, one time, and we've got to look after it as well too, wherever we are, for future generations.
And I feel that non-Indigenous Australians should be embracing our culture. I mean, we're talking about the longest living culture on planet Earth. That in itself is, a trophy, you could say. It's something that we should all embrace. I mean, when you talk about the first people of the first people, of all the people, I mean, that in itself is on this big island, Australia, you know?
That's right. And some of the yarns in growing up in Torres Strait, I want to touch on, you know, what families teach you, what your father teaches you, you know, what it's like growing up in the Torres Strait, but also for a lot of Torres Strait Islanders, they're born and raised on mainland Australia too, so there's that different experience of growing up.
Exactly. But our culture is strong. We carry it wherever we go, don't we, you know?
Of course, that connection and that love, and also we like to, you know, showcase it too. We like to sing, dance, have our own distinct kai kai too. So, you know, and get that, that's how we celebrate it as well too.
Exactly. Well, we are storytellers, and here you are, an author of three books now regarding the Torres Strait Island space, and telling the story and educating the people. It's a bridge builder too, isn't it?
That leads me to, there are some teacher's notes on the Black Ink website, and that's for years 7 to 12. But, you know, just go and have a look at it. There's something in there for everyone. And really good to see that there are teacher's notes. And there'll also be an audio book as well, too, coming out soon. And I'm looking forward to hearing that as well. narrating it, but I'm looking forward to hearing it as well. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. Too Deadly, sister, author, third book, Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia, that is out now. And congratulations, and looking forward to the next book. Keep doing what you're doing, and good yarn with you. You stay warm, my sister.
Yeah, it's up for that, Trevor. Thank you.
Yawo, eh?
All right. Yeah, yawo. Small yawo.
Yawo, small yawo.
All right.
Beautiful yarn there. Samantha Faulkner, author of the book Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia, and the editor of Growing Up Torres Strait Islander in Australia. This is her third book, two other books as well, as she mentioned, and it is fantastic. And yes, we are storytellers. And this is your daily program, National Talk Black. And we are live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and a big shout out to all our First Nation radio stations across this beautiful country of ours, a Deadly Black Network. Too Deadly.
Ooh.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry, coming to you live from First Station Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country. That's BB and Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Have your say, yarn up strong, 1-800-422-416. Now, nominations for the 2024 Australian Mental Health Prize open on April 22nd and will remain so until July 8, 2024. The winners will be announced on the 23rd of September, 2024. To nominate, answer three questions about the nominee's mental health contributions and impact on the online form at all the W's. Australian Mental Health Prize, one word, .org.au. Look, with that, there's categories include Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, lived experience, professional, and community hero. And speaking of community hero, I'm going to have a chat now to last year's winner of this fantastic prize, Professor Murray Toombs on the line. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Yama. Yeah, yama. And welcome. Say a big hello here from the beautiful Bidjigal land. So I'm sitting looking out over Coogee Beach.
Oh, lovely.
And I can see the sun is just shining beautifully across the horizon. Beautiful day here.
Beautiful. Professor Marie, thank you very much. Before we start, let the mob know who you mob. Where are you from, sister?
Yeah, so I am a Kuma Uralii woman. So on my nana's side, we're Kuma from Cunnamulla Bolanway. But my family there, they were forcibly removed and put on to Cherbourg Mission.
Yeah.
And they made a big name around Brisbane, big activists like my cousin Coco Wharton, who
yes.
leads a lot of the big protests down there.
He does.
And then on the other side, I'm Uralii, and we're from a place called Angledool, and down to Gadooga, where my mob are from there.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for a beautiful footprint. And listen, congratulations on your win last year, 2023, professional category in the Australian Mental Health Prize. How did you?
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a real honour. I was shocked, actually. So, I'm
how were you nominated, sister?
So I was nominated by, she's actually become my boss, so
yes.
but not at the time.
Your boss.
A beautiful ally, Professor Rebecca Ivis, who does a lot of work around injury and works with mob out there around Walgett and all over New South
Good.
Wales.
So, fantastic.
Yeah, she put me forward.
Well, she must love the work that you do, and I like to think a lot of our mob, we work with passion, with good spirit, but to be recognised and acknowledged and win prize like this, well, it's a cherry on the top, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it's a cherry on top for the mob that I work with.
Yes.
Of research is around suicide intervention prevention, and I do work with traditional healers, so everything about healing spirit and acknowledging the impacts that invasion, you know, colonization, whatever you want to call it, has had on mob. And
yes.
so, you know, I draw on our 65,000 years worth of DNA to this country and that, you know, strong identity that sits in a lot of us, but there's a lot of fragility that sits around that because we've been told, you know, it's not cool to be Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander. It's not cool to be, you know, to have like brown skin in this country. So, yeah, so the work I do sits around that, and it's a privilege to actually work in the space.
Professor, in what field are you a professor of?
Okay, so Professor Indigenous Health.
Okay.
I've got a really wide range of areas that I work in, but my own research and where I won this National Australian Health Prize came from the work that I did with over 94 communities across Australia to co-design a suicide intervention training program.
Okay, fantastic. And you're based where now for your
I'm based
your
in Sydney,
okay.
But I was up there in Brisbane and up on the Darling Downs for, 30 years. So
okay.
I've just moved down this way, actually. So
okay.
A bit of a fish out of water, but starting to find my way.
But still a Queenslander, yes.
Oh, yeah, always. Always, always.
So listen,
born up there.
Yes, beautiful, fantastic. So I'm just promoting the fact that the nominations for 2024 Australian Mental Health Prize is now open. Look, highly recommend people to endorse somebody to, you know, to put them forward, or people can put themselves forward. Is that the case?
Absolutely, and you know, think about people in the community that are heroes, that are doing this amazing work and, you know, often not noticed for the work that they do. That's what this prize is about.
Okay, yeah.
And everybody that won that prize last year, so there were four categories, I think it was four categories, were community-based. So, yes, cool. They might have, some of them had some fancy titles, some didn't. It didn't matter.
It didn't
matter.
Because
the common theme was, you know, just being passionate about what you do and making a difference. And we know out there in our in our space and across our countries here in Australia, there's so many people
unsung
that
heroes.
Day in, day out.
Exactly.
Yep, absolutely.
Unsung heroes. So don't care if you've got a title or not. I don't care what work you're doing. But if there's someone out there who's passionate about what they're doing and they are kicking goals and they've got a smile on their dial, we'll nominate them, is what you're saying, Professor Toombs.
Absolutely, yep. Or if you want to nominate yourself too, and I know that's not our way.
No.
But that is the other thing that you
okay.
can do. But I'm sure, you know, there will be lots of people that want to put people they know forward for this. And it's a wonderful opportunity. And what's great about it too is it promotes what, you know, the program or what it is that people are doing.
Are doing,
out there.
Exactly.
And
it highlights
that profile.
It. Puts it out there, yes.
Yep.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, fantastic. Thank you for the yarn, my sister, and congratulations again, 2023 winner of the professional category in the Australian Mental Health Prize for 2023. But we're saying that the nomination's over for 2024, and you leading from the front, well, we say do it. Throw the iron in the fire, yes?
Absolutely. Yeah, no shame. Just get amongst
no shame.
It, hey.
Too deadly, my sister. Yeah. Well, you stay warm, and all the best, and we'll yarn soon.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you so much for having me.
Take care, sister. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
A deadly yarn, beautiful yarn. Professor Marie Toombs, 2023 winner of the professional category in the Australian Mental Health Prize in 2023. And we're promoting that the nominations are open for 2024. And it started April 22nd and going right through to July 8th. 2024, and the winners will be announced on 23rd of September this year, 2024. So nominate yourself, or if you know anybody who you think is deadly working in this space, nominate them. That's what it's all about. And you can check it out on the Australian Mental Health Prize. Google that and all the information's there. Otherwise, stay tuned. Your daily program, National Talk Work with Trinity Trev, Murray from the Curry, live here at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israel Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS. Too deadly.
Since I was a kid, I had a dream, I had a baby. Million dollar flow, but the bro ain't even made it.
The bigger that you get, you don't figure they gonna hate it.
Your energy, your destiny,
my brother, stay motivated. If they wanna see you fall, my brother, stand tall. With your back against the wall, put your heart and give your all.
Music is my
my therapy, this factual. Gotta say what I feel and always keep it practical. I can read your body energy, no second guessing. They gave me the answer without me popping the question. I don't want your loyalty if it ain't from the start. Claiming that they love you, hiding demons in their heart. Reflections of their actions come to light, and that's the karma. Power of positivity, my buffer of the drama. I'm motivated for the kids, I don't need nobody else. Give it everything I got, and I can do it by myself. But if we chasing the same dream, teamwork to make it better. Let's do it for the people, paint the picture together. I'm gifted within the meaning and sisters who I believe in. They guided me on my dream, and my brother keep on proceeding. I'm struggling, fighting demons, and let it out when I'm grieving. Ambitions I keep on achieving, this music is so
ever
believing.
Since I was a kid, I had a dream, I had to pave it. Dream out of flow, but the bro ain't even made it. The bigger that you get, you don't figure they gonna hate it. Your energy, your destiny,
my brother, stay motivated. If they wanna see you fall, my brother, stand tall. Keep your back against the wall. Put your heart and give your all.
See, all I really know is the struggle we come from. Yeah, just hold on. Yeah, won't be long. Yeah.
I always put my money on the long shots. You told me give for gifts, so I'm giving all I got. Them DV screens, my alarm clock. See, my brother stay on the homicide. The haters gonna hate me, but they can't break me. That's how my mama raised me. Do this for my babies. I ain't seen sunshine lately. Since on the daily, my people gone crazy. I'm an unchained slave, circle breaker betrayed. Since back in the day, until they laid me in the grave. Against all odds, but this pistol be raised. Their stories being told, but we're flipping the page. But I know our people very strong. We got the strength to carry on. And through this country, we belong.
Ever since I was a kid, I had a dream, I had to pave it. Dream out of flow, but the bro ain't even made it. The bigger that you get, you don't figure they gonna hate it. Your energy, your destiny, my brother, stay motivated. If they wanna see you fall, my brother, stand tall. With your back against the wall, put your heart and give your all.
See, all I really know is the struggle we come from, yeah. Just hold on.
Yes, very good morning, New Delhi Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, 20, Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yindinji Country, BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the country thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saver call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, ASIC's Centrepay ban against the First Nations people set for a landmark racial discrimination legal challenge. Urban Rampage, a key retailer for First Nation people in remote communities, is poised to launch a landmark legal challenge against the Australian Securities and Investment Commission for what it says is a racist and paternalistic decision to permanently ban the business from offering Centrepay to more than 20,000 Indigenous customers. Look, with that, we're going to catch up with Yana Rajiv Maraja, Urban Rampage Media Advisor and Community and Government Relations on the line. Rajiv, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. I'm fine. How are you? And thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. I'm fine. Thank you very much. Where are you based, Rabji?
I'm based in Melbourne, Trevor, but look, I'm an old Darwin lad.
Darwin lad.
I've been up in the Northern Territory for many years.
Okay, fantastic. So please enlighten us. We're talking about Urban Rampage, a key retail for First Nation people in remote communities, is poised to launch a landmark legal challenge against the Australian Securities Investment Commission. Can you talk to us about Centrepay, this process for our First Nation mob living in communities, and Urban Rampage, what's their process, and tell us about ASIC's ban against the First Nation company organisation, please.
Yeah, sure, Trevor. So, look, basically, Trevor, I'd probably describe Urban Rampage as you know, almost like the Coles of the outback. So they've got 10 stores in Northern Territory, WA, and Queensland. Mm-hmm. Now, these stores, many of them are in remote communities where, you know, there are a large number of First Nations people live. They've been trading in these places for 20-odd years, long before Centrepay was introduced. So in 2016, they introduced Centrepay, which is it's a government scheme where, mm-hmm. you know, you can essentially obtain goods and pay later. And the way it's done is, you know, you might go in for your big shop, you might travel in, you know, a couple of hundred kilometres, whatever it is, to Urban Rampage stores and, you know, buy blankets, buy clothes, uniforms, school uniforms, clothes for funerals, etc. And, you know, these items would maybe cost more than a couple of hundred dollars. So you'd book it up, you take the items, go away, and then your deductions would come in from your benefits.
It's a form of helping them budget, is what I'm picking up?
It's a form of credit. It's a form of buy now, pay later. And you have to understand that a lot of First Nations people in these communities wouldn't have access to, you know, buy now, pay later schemes that, you know, those in the cities have.
Yeah, sure.
They're certainly not walking around with, you know, Amex or American Express cards.
No.
So, look, it's a levelling of the playing field. It gives them access to credit. It gives them access to, you know, acquire goods, interest-free, I might add, and no fees.
Mm.
And, you know, there's a maximum amount which is deducted from their benefit, which is $200. And at any time, they can ring up CentrePay and say, look, I'm having difficulty this week. Can you, you know, stop this payment? The payment is stopped. You keep the goods. There's no obligation to return it. There's no recourse from, you know, you don't get any calls from the store saying, you know, where are the goods? They're yours. You pay it off when you can.
So Urban Rampage is not doing anything wrong, are they?
Well, in fact, Trevor, they made the CentrePay ban permanent last week, which we're appealing, and they released a 39-page decision. They didn't publish it, so we went ahead and released it to the media ourselves.
Yes.
But the reason being is, look, if you read the decision, there's actually, we haven't done anything wrong. And ASIC actually says in that decision they haven't had one complaint to act on.
Yes.
Not only that, they found no wrongdoing in terms of pricing or any of those things. And, you know, and they found no evidence.
And yet they put a ban on it.
Yet they put a ban. So, look, Trevor, you know, I come from an Indigenous background, and so sometimes you look at these sorts of things and you wonder what's going on.
Well, if not this, then what? What's Plan B?
Well, look, Plan B is, you know, I guess that they, you know, they want people just to use cash, and you know, that's
we in the city don't use cash, you know.
Well, this is right. I mean, you know, everywhere is going to click and pay, right?
Sure.
And they're basically, look, it's a, to my mind, it's you know, this is a question where race comes into it.
Yeah.
How is it, you know, that very white privileged bureaucrats in a government organisation are making these decisions without evidence, without any, you know, without any sort of demonstration?
It's not one size fits all, is it, Ravier?
Well, look, you know, sometimes people can take everything from you, even your grievances.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I feel like there may be a bit of that going on here where the actual people that are using CentrePay haven't been consulted and they're not complaining. In fact, we sent out a number of video testimonials of them saying, bring it back. This is actually impacting us badly. We have a petition with more than 1,000 signatures. I think it's closing in on 1,200, 1,400 at the moment. So, look,
I feel as though that ASIC are making a decision on urban and city life, not remote life.
I have to say it frankly, Trevor. This is a decision made by, you know, white bureaucrats who haven't consulted First Nations people.
Yep.
And look, there's a sniff of paternalism here.
Yep.
And look, we actually want Indigenous politicians to come in and speak out on this issue. You know, we've reached out to Senator Melinda McCarthy, Marion Scrimgeour, and Jacinta Price, you know, asking for meetings because we actually think this is a big issue in the community.
Exactly.
Interestingly enough, this matter was first raised in Parliament by Senator Louise Pratt, I believe. Now, look, I don't know what credentials she has to be making any commentary in regards to what's happening in, you know, what sort of credit that people in First Nations communities should be able to access or not. So, you know, my message to the Indigenous senators is don't let these other people speak for your people.
It's well, exactly.
To come forward and speak up.
So MP Pratt doesn't sound Indigenous and doesn't sound as though she lives in community.
Well, I would say that would be correct, but, you know, she may provide information otherwise, but to my knowledge, that would be the case.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, I think a lot of things that impact Indigenous people, Indigenous communities, I think some of that conversation has to be taken back and not be hijacked by others because sometimes they come from a very paternalistic view, and it's something that they do perhaps to make themselves feel better.
Exactly.
But they don't necessarily think about the impacts on the people where, you know, who are actually using these services.
Well, it sounds like click and pay for whites only, no credit for blackfellas.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly, Trevor. I think you've nailed it.
Yeah, look, my friend, thank you very much for your yarn. Please keep in touch, and we'll be watching this closely. Good yarning with you, Rajiv, and we'll talk soon. You have a great day, my friend.
All right. Thank you, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Deadly yarn there. Rajiv Maraja, Urban Rampage Media Advisor and Community and Government Relations. ASIC's Senapay ban against First Nations people set for landmark racial discrimination legal change. Urban Rampage want to take ASIC to court and talk about this. Senapay to more than 20,000 Indigenous customers. Look, it's a nice way of, well, it's a credit for black people living in community, which they don't have access to. And we talk about necessities and buying uniforms and food and clothes and what have you. So if not this, what's plan B? And they said carry cash. Well, we in the city and urban life, we do not carry cash. It's all click and pay. So it's not one rule for one, different rule for another. Look, have you say, Jan Upstrong, add to the conversation in National Talk Black, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live at First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the country thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS. Thank you.
Until the break of day.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BB and Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. All right, now, as nominations open for the Australian Mental Health Prize, that happens, it has been open for the 2024 Australian Mental Health Prize since April 22nd, and it'll go right through to July 28th, and the winners will be announced on 22nd of September. And look, we're going to catch up a yarn now with a deadly sister, Megan Krakaru, the proud proud sister, is a beacon for First Nation rights, reshaping laws and advocating for the marginalised with Jerry Girogatis. She established NSPTRP, that's the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. And we've got Megan online. Megan, good morning, sister. How are you?
Good morning, brother. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, let the mob know who your mob, where you're from, Megan.
No worries. Sounds good. Megan Cracker. Come from a place called Mount Barker. That's Wagglekep country in the southwest corner of Western Australia. Come from a big family. I'm the youngest of 13. Mm-hmm. A couple of the brothers played with North Melbourne Footy Club back in the day.
Yes, yes. Gotcha. Cracker brothers, yes.
Yes, I...
To Delhi, sister. So, thank you for coming to the program. Now, your advocacy underscores the urgent need to address First Nations youth suicide, emphasising poverty, discrimination and limited education access as root causes. And you urged robust support systems and intervention to prevent further tragedies. Yes, sister?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of our people, we have gone from the suicides of 1 in 23 to 1 in 16 in the last decade. That means that it's the leading cause of death for our people right across the country. That's atrocious, and things aren't getting better in terms of suicides. Or suicidality and support for our people. So the work that we do with the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project,
yes,
we support the most marginalised, the vulnerable, the voiceless, the silent, the unheard, and always trying to make sure that there's platform to very much highlight the deficit truth which exists in our community. Right across the country, First Nations people fall below the poverty line by 40%. In Western Australia, where I come from, it's 60%. Northern Territory, it's 75, 80%. In this day and age, particularly with Australia being the 12th richest economy in the world, it's just unacceptable. It's an indictment, not only by the Australian government, but every single government in the various jurisdictions right across the country. Now, people, they need the help. They need the support. There's a lot of trauma in our community, and unaddressed trauma, if it's not addressed, can kill, can lead to disordered thinking. And that's what I see firsthand on a daily basis right across this country, more so in Western Australia where I come from.
Yeah. When you look at those numbers, they're very high. And we talk about COVID-19 as a pandemic. Look, if we're not careful, my sister, this will become a pandemic heading that way.
Right across the country, in the last 3 years, 10,000 people have taken their precious lives. 10,000 people.
Yes.
That is a crisis of our time.
Yes, yes.
When you have 10,000 people take their lives to that dreadful thing called suicide. So that means that 1 in 26 Australians across this country take their lives. That's unacceptable. It's an indictment of the Australian federal governments.
Exactly.
The ways forward are really quite simple. The intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach, which is 24/7. We need to decolonise the existing mental health support systems because they're not meeting the needs for our people that need it most.
Exactly, exactly. And look, it could also stem back even through school, you know, primary school, high school, and all the above.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if we have a look up in the remote communities, there's 1,200 remote communities right across the country. Of that, there's 120,000 people that live in the remote communities. But 35,000 children will never get a secondary education.
Yeah.
That's disgraceful.
Exactly.
In terms of schooling, where I come from in Perth, the metropolitan area, 1 in 2 children will never finish school.
So we're talking about closing gaps in all areas. I mean, this is a gap we need to close because it is widening, isn't it, Megan?
Oh, 100%. So in terms of closing their gap, incarceration, suicide, child removals are not closing. child removals back in 1997, when they had the Bringing Them Home report. There were 2,000 black kids in care. 2008, the Prime Minister gave the apology to the Stolen Generation, Mr Rudd. 8,000 black kids in care. Today we have a stifling 22,000 black kids in care. No, it's not getting better. In terms of suicides, as I mentioned, it's gone from 1 in 23 down to 1 in 16, making it the leading cause of death for our people under the ages of 44.
Yes.
So even though there's an excessive amount of money that's being poured into First Nations people and communities, it's not meeting the needs of the ones that I see and work with on a daily basis, Saturday and Sunday included. It's the intense psychosocial support, the assertive outreach, which is 24/7, which is much needed in this community. We see a lot of people out in the community, which I, across the country, whether it be South Australia, whether it be in New South Wales, some helping as many as what they can with no funding, no support, but incredible hearts like Farlap.
So any money spent this way is not an expense, it's investment. We need to invest in closing this gap, and the government needs to come to the table strongly.
Well, that's exactly right. And we can't keep funding the same, because if we're going to fund the same, we're going to get the same results. That's the reality. And if anything, it's going to get worse. What there is right out in the community, there are many strong Aboriginal local communities doing some powerful work, some that don't get funded in ways that should. We need to ensure that the smaller organisations... an excessive amount of funding is poured into those small organisations to give them agency, to give them more reach, to give them the resources.
Exactly.
Because the reality is in terms of the work that myself and my colleague Jerry Georgiadis does, we're punching well and truly above our weight.
Exactly.
We're calling out, we're speaking with the families. The families are actually taking the highest platforms and they're speaking in media, changing the narrative, changing the education, shifting the public deficit, the public consciousness. And an example of that is the Banksia Hill class action. So the Banksia Hill Detention Centre is the only youth detention centre in Western Australia. About 3 years ago, partnered up with a firm called Levitt Robinson, lawyers. They're based in Sydney.
Yeah.
We'd taken all these testimonies from young ones in Banksia Hill Detention Centre. And then the young ones, the older ones, they would speak. And they would speak to media. Four Corners, Current Affairs, you name it, they've spoken. As a result, the public education is there. The public consciousness has now shifted, so there's massive attention on incarceration for young people. Right now in Western Australia, we have 1 in 12 Aboriginal men that are in prison, and a lot of it's got to do with poverty. We have a homeless crisis right through, or a houseless crisis right across the country. So, for example, in Western Australia, where I come from, where there's 21,000 people on the wait list for public housing, what that means is that there's 48, 49,000 people houseless or homeless.
Yep.
Now, if you don't have your own home...
And that's a necessity of life, isn't it, Megan?
You need your own home, then.
You do.
And that's a reality.
Yeah.
And for too many people, they speak about us without us. So one of the things that we've made sure that happens, particularly when we're advocating, whether it be homelessness, whether it be incarceration, whether it be child removals, is that the voices of the people are paramount. A young boy, he passed away 10 years old in Perth within the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And he was in Department of Child Protection Care.
Sorry.
And that went right across the story, right across the country in terms of what happened to this dear little soul. But these are the mum and dad, they wanted to speak. They didn't want his name to go down unheard.
Exactly.
Because right across this country, there are strong laws that stops the person from speaking out if they've been in care.
And
photos can't be used.
Yeah,
names can't be shown. That has to stop.
That's right.
Because what happens is that this young boy has now been laid to rest in peace there, but his name is not out there publicly. His photo can't be shown publicly. His mum and dad, they want his name said. They want the photo shown.
Exactly.
The powerful stories come from the families, and the families are just incredible advocates, incredible human beings, but we are being failed one time after the next, government after the next, and it's just been going on. We are not a business for these people.
Exactly.
And as a result, we must have to stand and fight with courage, with strength, with truth and conviction, and very much highlight the deficit truth from the voice of the people that have been impacted, whether it be by suicide, whether it be by incarceration, whether it be by death in custody, whether it be by homelessness.
Mm.
Our people, they mean something. They stand for something, and they're proud human beings.
Well, it's just a very strong words. Thank you very much. Good sharing with you. Megan, look, look, you take care. Stay strong, sister. I believe you're in Cairns. How long are you here for, sis?
Until Friday.
Friday.
So we've got the Common Threads conference over here. It's been really quite powerful. There's about 150 people
Good.
From all parts of the country.
Yes. Common Threads.
So it's been loud. Common Threads, yeah. Mm. So it's been loud, proud. There's been beautiful stories that have been, exchanged.
Mm.
But it's a pleasure being over here. Much honour.
Yeah, my sister. Well, stay strong. We'll talk soon. Welcome anytime here to Bummer Brippa Media. Stay black, stay deadly, and we'll go on soon. And all the best to you, Megan.
You're a champion. Thanks, brother, and thank you to all your listeners.
Take care, sis. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you, brother.
Deadly Yande, that's Megan Cracker, and she's established the NSPTRP, a National Suicide Prevention Trauma and Trauma Recovery Project. And look, we're promoting the nominations for the 2024 Australian Mental Health Prize. It's now open since April 22nd, and it will remain open till July 8th. So winners will be announced on 23rd of September. So if you want to nominate somebody or nominate yourself, then go ahead and do so. Australian Mental Health Prize, you can Google that. And we're fostering compassionate communities for mental health. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. And good yarning with you, Mob. We're here live at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumper Bip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Big shout out, NERS, to Deadly. Yes, very good morning, you Deadly Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumper Bip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Yarn up strong, you mob, too deadly. All right, now the Western Cape Turtle Threat Abatement Alliance, this WCTTAA, represents an agreement between land and sea managers from Pomperau, Napranum, Mapoon and Northern Peninsula area to work together for the protection of marine turtles along the west coast of Cape York. Look, with that, I'm going to catch up a yarn now with Manuela Fisher. She's Western Cape York Turtle Threat Abatement Alliance and coordinator and organiser of the ranger training for the WCTTAA in Danger Rangers. And on the line, Manuela, good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So we are talking about protecting Cape York turtles and working with our ranger groups and also welding works is coming into the frame of things, making cages. So how long have you been working in this space?
I have been with Cape York NRM since June last year.
So June last year?
10 months. Yeah.
Okay, lovely. You enjoying it?
Yeah, it's very great. It's a combination of being based in Cairns but going on country during the turtle nesting season and spend a lot of time with the rangers up in the Cape York region.
Fantastic. And where do you come from, Manuela?
Originally, I'm born in Germany and I've been living in Australia for 10 years.
10 years. Well, guten Morgen. Guten Morgen. Thank you for coming to the program. Look, it's a fantastic program. Land and Sea Rangers from Pomperau, Kawanyama in the Cape who are learning, well, welding schools, aren't they, for the next level, learning how to build aluminium cages to protect the turtles. And who are we protecting the turtles from?
So the turtle nests along the Western Cape York region are mainly predated by feral pigs, dingoes and iguanas.
Mm.
And so the rangers are putting these aluminium cages over the nest to protect the animals from digging up the nest and raiding the nest and taking the eggs out.
Okay.
So now we have provided this training for the rangers to build their own cages because previously we have sourced these cages from suppliers and it was really time-consuming and costly to ship these cages up to the Cape.
So hence the welding works and they're getting their skills in welding it's safer. They're picking up skills and they're protecting the turtles. I think it's a fantastic concept.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely. And upskilling the rangers and getting them up to speed with their welding training. And so now everything is done on country.
Good, done on country. I love that.
And
rangers, are we talking male and females, Manuela?
It is a mix, yeah. So
Baxter,
the Western Cape Torres Strait Abatement Alliance is a partnership of 6 Indigenous ranger groups,
mm-hmm.
from all the way from Bamaga down to Kovanyama.
Okay.
And different ranger groups have, you know, female and male rangers on board. So,
good.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Manuela, what's your background, please?
I'm an ecologist, wildlife ecologist. So
okay.
I have done my studies in Germany and Australia in environmental science, and I have a PhD in environmental science from University of Melbourne. So,
yes.
Yeah. And I've been working in the space of threatened species all my career and with Indigenous rangers.
Beautiful. And working with the rangers, you then in some ways become a student as well, don't you? Learning about our mob, about our country, and about how we operate. Yeah.
Yeah, they teach me a lot on country. It's beautiful to be out there with them and learning about things that I don't know yet about. And
yes.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Sometimes there's elders with us as well, and they obviously have an incredible knowledge that
they
love
do.
To pass on.
Yeah, good. Fantastic. Well, you're in a very fantastic spot in work-wise, but also community-wise. So thank you very much for sharing. A big shout-out to all your Indigenous rangers there. Up there at Cape York, and looking after our turtles, and the fact that we've got welding at the table now and they're learning those skills. So, look, it's a fantastic program. And thank you for sharing, Manuela.
No worries at all. Thank you so much.
You take care. All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A beautiful yarn there. Manuela Fisher, her name is, Western Cape York Turtle Threat Abatement Alliance, WCWTAA. And they represent a dream between land and sea managers from everywhere in the Cape York area, and working together for the protection of marine turtles along the western coast off Cape York. Look, fantastic, beautiful yarn there. This is your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Too deadly.
We treat you, mob. Hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Best of National Talk Black. Catch you, mob, next week, same time, same station.